is next on KIXI AM and FM in Seattle. And the weather outlook for the KIXI listening area, calling for showers tomorrow, decreasing Sunday, with periods of partial clearing. The highs in the 40s, lows in the upper 30s. And currently in downtown Seattle, it's 41 degrees, also 41 at the airport. The barometer rising at 29.36. On the passes, traveler's advisories issued for the Cascades and Olympics, and on Snoqualmie, two-way traffic through the East Snowshed due to a potential slide hazard. It's 11 o'clock.
CBS News. Britain's Prime Minister Heath apparently intends to stay on even though his party did not get a majority in the elections. This is Doug Poling reporting on the CBS Radio Network. Heath Friday night called on Queen Elizabeth and said he will try to govern as the head of a minority regime. There are reports Heath will try to get the support of the minority Liberal Party to enable him to carry on. With nearly all the results in now from the balloting, it looks like a photo finish with the Labour Party ahead by a thin margin. The important thing is that neither major party got a clear majority of the seats in Parliament, a majority being needed for an administration in Britain. In the voting in Northern Ireland, militant Protestants came out ahead, sweeping up 12 of Ulster's seats in the British Parliament. Bernadette Devlin, the young Catholic firebrand, was one of the casualties of the election, losing her seat in Parliament to a militant Protestant. More news after this message.
Dear lady, I think you will want to make room in your glove compartment for family circles, A Woman's Guide to Emergency Car Repairs, the special pull-out section in the current issue. It unravels, in clear, simple terms, the mysteries under the hood, tells you what makes the car go and what to do when it doesn't. Can save you considerable cash in towing and minor repairs. The March Family Circle is now at the checkout counter of your supermarket. This is Jack Sterling inside Family Circle, the world's leading women's magazine.
Drug abuse didn't just happen. The key to destroying drug abuse is getting help from citizens who care enough to get heroin pushers off the streets. If you know the name, address, or description of a pusher, use the heroin hotline. It's toll-free. The number is 800-368-5363. You don't have to give your name, just the important information you have. So do your part to get rid of drug abuse. Call 800-368-5363.
The Watergate grand jury has indicted seven of President Nixon's former aides and political associates for alleged conspiracy in the Watergate cover-up. Those indicted include former top Nixon aides John Ehrlichman and H.R. Haldeman. The grand jury also gave sealed information to Judge John Sirica, reportedly pertaining to the president himself, but there is no word on whether it is an accusation, an exoneration, or something else. Senator Joseph Montoya, a member of the Senate Watergate Committee, commented on the indictments.
I think one thing stands out, that the special prosecutor has not been deterred by anything in pursuing the duties of his office. And certainly it has been demonstrated to the American people that he has brought down indictments against individuals regardless of their high position in government.
Senator Joseph Montoya, Democrat of New Mexico. Vice President Ford came to the defense of President Nixon Friday night at a Republican fundraising affair in Phoenix. Barry Serafin has a report.
Ford praised President Nixon as a man who was trying to protect the integrity of the White House. The vice president did not mention the latest Watergate indictments, but did say Democrats are rubbing their hands together in glee in anticipation of landslide victories this fall. That said, Ford would be a travesty. The vice president claimed a big boost in the Democratic majority on Capitol Hill would mean a runaway, veto-proof, big-spending Congress that would distort the traditional system of checks and balances and escalate the inflationary spiral in this country. Earlier today, Ford acknowledged that Republicans face tough odds this year, not just because of Watergate, but because of problems such as inflation, adding, though, that he thought the economic situation would brighten. Addressing his partisan dinner audience, the vice president was flatly optimistic about Republican chances, to the point of predicting that the dinner's guest of honor, House Minority Leader John Rhodes, stands a good chance of becoming Speaker of the House. Barry Serafin, CBS News, Phoenix, Arizona.
Senator George McGovern says what he terms President Nixon's soiled administration is now the chief threat to the presidency. Starting Saturday, the cost of mailing a letter goes up again. The postal rate increase means a first-class letter will cost 10 cents to mail instead of 8 cents. Airmail goes up from 11 cents to 13. The price of a first-class stamp will be exactly double what it was a decade ago. Now this.
Even if someone served them a slice of beef, they couldn't bite into it. Their teeth are too weak. I'm not talking about some people off in Africa or Asia. I'm talking about Americans. American children. It's really tragic how many thousands of them there are in this country whose teeth will literally rot because they'll never receive basic dental care. They may not even own a toothbrush. What hurts is that it takes so little for any one of us to help them. The same dollar, for instance, that buys you two packs of cigarettes can buy three American children the first toothbrushes they've ever owned. I'm Eli Wallach. Won't you give up some cigarettes so some American children can have their first toothbrushes? Send your dollar to Americans for Children's Relief, Box 5050, Stamford, Connecticut. That's Box 5050, Stamford, Connecticut. $1. Oh, and of course, if you can afford more, give more.
A publishing house in Hamburg, West Germany, is putting out a new magazine they're calling The Third Reich. To promote it, they've been passing out posters, record jackets, and paper flags bearing swastikas, pictures of Adolf Hitler and his aides, and other scenes from Germany's Nazi era. The authorities in West Germany didn't think it was a good idea, and they've started to confiscate the material. They're acting under a post-war law that bans the distribution of Nazi propaganda in Germany. Doug Poling, CBS News.
CBS 4 Seattle, this is KIXI, where the time now is 6 minutes past 11.
The CBS Radio Mystery Theater presents...
Come in. Welcome. I'm E.G. Marshall. Welcome to the sound of suspense. Welcome to the fear you can hear. But mostly to the world of terrifying imagination. In the story you're about to hear, the heroine is a young woman of 77 who has reached her golden years with her sense of independence intact, with a spryness to her limbs, very good vision, and excellent hearing. But as you are about to learn, there are times when hearing well is not a blessing.
I did it, Mrs. Canby. Are you listening to me? I killed Richardson.
No.
I did it. Me.
No. I don't want to hear it. Mr. Paulson, please. Please don't tell me about it. Please.
Mystery drama, The Old Ones Are Hard to Kill, was written especially for the Mystery Theater by Henry Slessor and stars Agnes Moorhead. It is sponsored in part by Anheuser-Busch Incorporated, Brewers of Budweiser, and by the Kellogg Company, makers of Kellogg's Special K cereal. I'll return shortly with Act One.
Some research experts say you can't taste the difference between beers. Well, if they're right, then Anheuser-Busch wastes a barrel of time Beechwood aging Budweiser. Only they don't think so. Brewing beer right does make a difference. And they're betting a bundle that you can taste the difference in Bud. When it comes to brewing Budweiser, the Anheuser-Busch choice is to go all the way. Because they still care about quality. Look at it this way. If the Bud people have a choice between what some experts say and what beer drinkers say, well, you'd better believe they'll go with you beer drinkers every time. When you say Budweiser, you've said it all. Anheuser-Busch, St. Louis.
Basically, when we started the street corner scouting program, what I did was I came into the communities that had, you know, very little scouting at all.
Hey, Tiny, come here.
What I had to do was I had to come out here every day during the week, including Saturdays and Sundays, and go out on these same alleys with them and play the same kind of games they play, and just have a regular scouting program with them.
Did you know there's such a thing as street corner scouting? That it's bringing scouting to millions of boys who never even heard the word scouting? Did you also know that for every boy in scouting today, in our suburbs as well as in our cities, there's another boy who'd like to be but can't? And that the reason most of them can't is because no adult in the neighborhood thinks scouting's worth the time?
Basically, you got to go to where they are. If they're in the ballpark or behind the house or in the barn, you got to go to them.
If you don't think scouting's worth your time, you don't know enough about scouting. Find out more. Write Scouting, North Brunswick, New Jersey, 08902.
And now, here's Act One of The Old Ones Are Hard to Kill. It begins with a stethoscope, a blood pressure reading, an electrocardiogram, and an altogether satisfying report on the health of Mrs. Ada Canby.
Well, can't see a thing to complain about, Ada. That little congestion you had last time is all cleared up. All in all, I'd say you're doing fine.
For a woman my age, you mean.
The older the chicken, the tougher it is to kill. That's what my grandmother used to tell me, and she lived to be 98. Speaking of relatives, you see much of Walter.
My grandson? Oh, the usual once-a-year visit, and he always comes up with the same complaint.
What's that?
That I shouldn't be living all alone.
That big house of yours must get pretty lonely sometimes.
Well, the truth is, Dr. George, I'm not alone there.
You're not?
I decided to take in a boarder last month.
Really?
I haven't written Walter about it. I'm sure he'd object to my taking in a stranger, but there's really nothing wrong with Mr. Paulson. Except his health, maybe.
His health? What's wrong with him?
Oh, the poor man's had a terrible cold for the past 2 weeks. Won't let me do a thing for him, though.
Now, where did you meet this Mr. Paulson?
He answered the ad I ran. He's just back from South America. Been living in Brazil 3 years. He's a very nice gentleman, really. He keeps himself and tends his birds. He has the loveliest blue parakeets. You can hear them chirping all over the house. Oh, it's the friendliest sound.
Well, I don't see anything wrong with what you're doing, Ada. Just make sure you don't go and catch the man's cold.
Well, there's not much chance of that. Poor man hardly ever leaves his room. Well, how much do I owe you?
I'll send you the bill.
I'm sure you'll forget all about it. Promise me you'll send it. Dear. Mr. Paulson? Are you all right?
Yes, Mrs. Canby. I'm all right.
That cough sounds worse than ever to me. Why don't you let me fix you a little hot milk and honey?
No, thank you, Mrs. Canby. Thanks very much. I'm going to try to get some sleep.
Well, all right, if you say so. I guess it's time I was in bed myself. Oh, my. Listen to that poor man. I wonder if he keeps his birds awake, too.
Mrs. Canby, please. Please.
For heaven's sake, is he calling me?
Mrs. Canby.
He is calling me. I'm coming, Mr. Paulson. Oh, no. Where are those darn slippers? I'll be right there. What is it, Mr. Paulson? What's the matter?
Mrs. Canby.
Mr. Paulson, just look at you. Why didn't you tell me you were so sick? I would have called a doctor.
No. No, too late now. Too late.
I know a very good doctor. I saw him only this afternoon. I'll go and call him right
no,
now.
No, please, listen to me.
Well, I've got to get help for you, Mr. Paulson.
I'm dying. Confession.
Wait, do you want a priest? Is that what you want?
Richardson murdered 10 years ago.
What?
Murdered. I did it. I killed him for money. I was paid. Did you hear me?
Oh, Lord. Mr. Paulson, do you know what you're saying?
Do you understand me? Lindell is innocent. I killed Richardson, not Lindell.
Well, let me get help. And you can tell them yourself, Mr. Paulson, and the police and the doctor.
You tell them, please. Tell them to free Lindell. He's innocent. Tell them I'm the one who killed Richardson 10 years ago.
Oh, I don't know anything about such things, and I don't want to.
I did it. I killed Richardson. I did it.
No, I don't want to hear it. I don't. Please don't tell me. Please. Mr. Paulson, Mr. Paulson? Oh, dear God, I think he's gone. Listen to those poor little birdies. I suppose they miss poor Mr. Paulson. I'll lay them in his room. Well, let's see about this letter now. Dear Walter, I hope you don't mind my turning to you for advice, but I really don't know what to do. It's been 3 days since my boarder, Mr. Paulson, passed away, and I still haven't told the police what the man said to me. I just can't bring myself to get mixed up in anything like this. Dear, what's the use of writing Walter? He'll probably think I've dreamed it all up. No, I'll just forget it. Only how do you forget such a thing? Those names, I keep hearing them. Richardson, Lindell. Lindell is innocent. Oh, dear God, what if it's all true? If Mr. Paulson actually murdered this Richardson, and Lindell is innocent? Only, well, who are they? I wonder if a telephone book, well, why not? Let's see, Richardson, here it is. Oh, Lord, there's dozens of them. Well, I'll try Lindell. That wouldn't be as common, I don't suppose. Yes, here it is. There's only about half a dozen, then. D-L-D-E-L-L-L. Oh, my heavens, Lindell and Richardson. Both names together, Lindell and Richardson Investments. 9 Concourse, 4153132. I wonder if... Well, maybe it's the only way to be sure. Mr. Lindell? He isn't? Well, then what about Mr. Richardson? Oh, I see. Well, is there someone there I can speak to? Yes, please. Thank you.
Hello. This is Miss Chelton. May I be of service?
Well, maybe you can. I want to know about your Mr. Richardson, about when he died. I think I did business with him once, a long time ago.
Well, it's 10 years, madam, just about. But if you're interested in investment advice...
Well, I'll think about it. Thank you very much. 10 years. Well, it could be a coincidence. I guess it all depends on how he died.
Well, Mrs. Canby, please come in. Have a seat.
Thank you.
Well, now, how can we be of help to you?
I didn't come here to get help, Mr. Chelton. I came to help you, as a matter of fact. Or, rather, somebody you know.
Who would that be?
Mr. John Lindell, the man who was supposed to have murdered Mr. Richardson.
I'm afraid I'm not following you.
Well, it took me all week to find out what happened to those two men, and finally I found the story in the old newspaper room down at the library about Mr. Lindell being indicted for killing his partner. But I'm sure you know the whole story a lot better than I do.
Well, of course I know the story, but that was quite a long time ago, Mrs. Canby.
10 years doesn't seem so long when you're my age. Anyway, the point is that I can help your Mr. Lindell, only I can't do it alone.
Did you know John Lindell?
No, I didn't. Nor Mr. Richardson, for that matter. The man I knew was named Paulson.
Who?
I rented a room to Mr. Paulson, and he died about 8 days ago of pneumonia. I was there when it happened.
Well, that's unfortunate, but...
Before he died, Mr. Paulson told me something about Mr. Richardson's murder. He said Mr. Lindell hadn't been responsible, that he, Mr. Paulson, had committed it for money.
Oh, Mrs. Canby, listen to me.
It was this man Lindell that bothered him. The fact that he was in prison for something he didn't do. I thought I should tell you this, Mr. Shelton, because you knew both of these gentlemen. It said so in the newspaper.
Mrs. Canby, my dear woman.
What?
I don't know what silly story you heard, but it's completely wrong. There wasn't any question about what happened. This boarder of yours, whatever his name is, merely had an obsession.
Well, just the same, I thought you could follow through on this business. Yeah. Tell the police. Because if it is true, Mr. Lindell should be freed.
On evidence like that?
Well, I don't know anything about evidence. I'm just telling you what I heard. Well, never mind. I suppose I should have told the police myself.
Oh, wait, Mrs. Canby. Let me put your mind at rest. John Lindell is no longer in prison.
He isn't?
He's dead, Mrs. Canby. He's been dead for the last 3 years.
Oh.
He wasn't a young man when all this happened, when he accused his partner, Fred Richardson, of defrauding him and shot him dead.
He died in prison?
Even if all you say is true, that this man was Richardson's murderer, you can't help John Lindell any longer. He's beyond that.
But his name, don't you want to clear his name?
Have you any proof, any living witness?
Just myself.
Forget it, Mrs. Canby. That's my advice to you. The old wound is healed. Don't reopen it.
Oh, well, it troubles me so. I haven't thought of anything else since it happened. Perhaps if I saw a minister, if I had some advice from a man of God, maybe...
Mrs. Canby, now you've said something. Now you've shown me the way. That's where our answer lies, dear woman, in prayer. Mm-hmm. In the forgiveness of our dear Lord. Will you pray with me, Mrs. Canby?
Pray? Here?
Why not? God is everywhere. Please, join me. Dear Lord, tell us what to do. Give us your divine guidance. Show us the path to righteousness.
Mr. Shelton,
help us, O Lord. Help us to understand. Teach us to forgive the sins of others and to forget them. To forget. I feel much better now, Mrs. Canby. Do you?
I'm not sure.
Let us turn this matter over to God, Mrs. Canby. Not to the police, but to the Lord. It's in his hands now. Don't you agree?
Well, in a way, that's true. Since they're dead now. All of them. Yes?
Mrs. Canby?
Yes?
My name's Stuart Winfield, Mrs. Canby. Mm-hmm. I understand you have a room for rent?
Yes, I do.
Well, I'm new in town. I just arrived from Philadelphia. I've been staying at a hotel, but I'd like something homier.
Well, the room I have is $35 a week. I can't offer you any meals, but you can use the kitchen all you want.
Well, that sounds good to me.
Would you like to see the room?
Yes, ma'am, I sure would.
Well, come on in, then.
Thank you.
By the way, how did you know I had a room for rent?
Hmm?
I was going to place an ad this weekend.
Oh, I guess someone at the hotel mentioned it. I forget just who. Say, this is a real fine old house, Mrs. Canby.
Mm-hmm.
I can see that I'm going to like this place. Just fine.
And so Mrs. Canby has a new boarder. He's a very personable young man.
with a great deal more charm than old Mr. Paulson had. Perhaps in a little while, Mrs. Canby will be able to forget her former boarder and the shocking confession he made on his deathbed. I'll be back shortly with Act Two.
And now another tale of the ball and chain. At Kellogg's Special K presents...
Presents Last Tango in Pittsburgh.
There I was at Raoul's All Night Tango Lounge.
My little orchid, will you tango with me?
It was Raoul.
You're a splendid dancer.
Thank you.
But what was that?
I was what?
That sound effect.
Oh, I'm a few pounds overweight, and this ball and chain points out how my extra weight can get in the way.
I'm pointing you back to your chair.
Our heroine decided to lose that extra weight. She exercised and ate smart at every meal, starting with a Special K breakfast. A bowl of Special K, skim milk, tomato juice, and coffee. It's less than 240 calories, 99% fat-free, and 100% delicious. After a while, she was rid of the ball and chain and back at Raoul's.
Darling, you're looking fantastic.
What a happy ending.
What ending? We're just getting started.
Raoul, get lost.
Your happy ending could begin with the Kellogg's Special K breakfast.
And that's another tale of the ball and chain.
To a child who doesn't read, the world is a closed book. Drifting, dropping back, dropping out. That's why a nationwide organization named RIF, Reading is Fundamental, was formed. To help get books into the hands of children who have no books of their own. A book a child can pick out for himself, for keeps. A book that really belongs to him and makes him want to read. It works. There are more than 150 local RIF programs starting up in communities like yours. They're proving that once you get a child into books, there's no stopping him. Won't you help? Write to RIF Incorporated, that's RIF, care of Smithsonian Institution, Washington, D.C., 20560.
Winfield took no time at all to make himself at home in Ada Canby's big old house. He loved everything about his room. The fine old four-poster bed, the crazy quilt that Ada herself had sewn up 40 years ago, the lace curtains on the window. He even loved Mr. Paulson's blue parakeets. But what he really seemed to like best was Mrs. Canby herself.
Just take me 2 minutes to get these clean sheets on the bed, Mr.
Here, Peter. Let me give you a hand.
No, I can manage. I've been making this bed for almost 50 years.
50? You've lived in this house that long?
Moved in here when I got married, back in 1919. My husband David bought it for us. Our only son, Ralph, was born in it.
And you've lost them both?
Yes, they're both dead, but I haven't lost them.
Oh, yes, I understand, Mrs. Canby. I guess I feel that way about my mom.
Your mother's dead?
Yes, she died when I was 2.
Listen, Mr. Winfield, are you sure you want these birds in your room? Hmm? I could take them to the parlor if you want.
No, I think they're great. I think everything's great about this house. But there is something you can do for me.
What's that?
Would you mind not calling me Mr. Winfield?
Oh?
That's what they call my father. My name's Stuart.
Well, all right. Stuart. Dear Walter, I think it's about time I told you that I have a boarder in the house. Mr. Winfield is the nicest young man you could want to meet. He's a great deal friendlier than my first gentleman, Mr. Paulson, and he seems to like nothing better than to sit around evenings and talk. We talk about his home and his parents and his plans for the future. I think the poor boy misses his home and family, and I'm sort of a substitute for all that.
You know, it isn't really fair, Mrs. Canby. You said I had kitchen privileges, but that doesn't mean you have to cook for me.
Well, it's a pleasure, Stuart. I haven't had anyone to cook for in years.
You're kidding. You mean to say you cook this good without practice?
Oh, you're just being nice. I'm sure that stew is just plain ordinary.
It's terrific, no kidding. It tastes like, well, it It tastes like home, if you know what I mean.
It depends on whose home you mean.
Well, my mom cooks stews like this. That's what I meant.
Your mom? Mm. What? But she died when you were only two.
Oh, well, I guess I didn't mean my mom exactly. I was thinking of my Aunt Martha. I mean, she's the one who sort of took over the cooking and stuff after my mother died. And my father's sister, you know?
I see. Well, that was lucky that you had someone to take her place.
Yeah, that's right. Excuse me.
My, Stuart, yeah. You're not coming down with anything, are you?
No, I'm fine. Just a little case of the sniffles.
Listen, if your room isn't warm enough, I have an extra
blanket. No, the room's just fine. Don't worry about it.
Well, you be sure now. I know I felt a little guilty about poor Mr. Paulson when he got sick. Maybe I didn't take good enough care of him.
Paulson?
Mm-hmm.
Was that your former boarder, the bird lover?
Yes, that was his name, the poor man.
Well, tell me about him.
Well, I don't really know that much about him. He lived here less than 2 months.
Well, what sort of a guy was he?
Very quiet. He kept to himself.
Did you say he was from South America?
I don't remember if I did or not.
Well, you must have said it.
Yes, of course. He was American, but he'd been living in Brazil. I don't know why exactly. Although, come to think of it, maybe I do.
What do you mean?
Well, it just occurred to me that Brazil might be just the place for someone who came into a lot of money and wanted to leave the country.
I don't understand.
I really think you are getting a cold, Stuart. I'm getting that blanket out this minute.
Now, wait, Mrs. Canby. I'd rather hear about...
Never mind. I don't want to take any chances. I'll be right back.
Yes, Mrs. Canby. Don't take any chances.
Stuart?
Yes? Come in.
I brought you a tray, Stuart.
Oh. No, you shouldn't have. You shouldn't have gone to all that trouble, Mrs. Canby.
It wasn't the least bit of trouble. Besides, you've got to have some supper. Feed a cold and starve a fever. That's what this
is. I was going to come out to the kitchen and get myself a sandwich or something. You didn't have to bring it to me. Oh, look at that. Is that roast chicken?
Well, that's what it's supposed to be. I hope it tastes all right.
Noodle soup with dumplings. Mrs. Canby, you're spoiling me rotten. Do you know that?
Hey, I just thought it'd be a good idea if you stayed in bed and took it easy. You weren't planning to go out tonight, were you?
No, I was just going to stay in and read for a while. Maybe watch television.
Oh, that's good. Here, I'll just set this tray down.
Oh, the service here is just too good. Oh, we never finished our talk the other day about that boarder of yours, Mr. Paulson.
Well, there's not much to say about him, really.
Well, you said something about his living in South America. You said you thought you understood why he was living there. Sounded real interesting.
Well, the truth is, Stuart, there is something to tell about Mr. Paulson. Maybe you can help me feel better about it all.
About what?
Now, I'm not going to tell you if you don't eat.
All right, Mrs. Canby, I'll eat.
Well, it happened just about 3 weeks ago.
You know something, Mrs. Canby? That's about the best roast chicken I've had in years.
I'm sure I spoiled your appetite with all my chatter.
No, that was a really interesting story.
But what do you think of it all, Stuart?
Hmm?
Do you think I did the right thing?
Well, frankly, Mrs. Canby, I do.
Honestly?
Well, this guy Chelton sounds a little screwy, but I think he's all right. I mean, from a practical standpoint.
Then you agree with him?
Sure. This man Richardson's dead, right? And... what's his name, Lindell?
Yes.
Well, he's dead too, right?
And poor Mr. Paulson, the man who supposedly killed Richardson.
Well, there you are. Nothing you can do will bring any of them back, right?
Well, yes, but just the same.
And you know the police, Mrs. Canby. They'll be hounding you forever. Tracking mud into your parlor, bothering you with questions. I just think Mr. Chelton was right. Let sleeping dogs lie.
Yes, that's what I keep telling myself, but you know something?
What?
there's one thing Mr. Chilton forgot. And me too, I suppose.
What's that?
Why, the real murderer. He may still be alive, even if all the others are gone. Don't you see?
No, I don't.
Even if Mr. Lindell can't be helped anymore, that doesn't mean the real murderer should get away.
But the real murderer is dead. Paulson.
No, the killer is the man who hired Mr. Paulson. Don't you see? Is it right that he should get away with it?
Now, wait a minute. You're jumping to conclusions.
No, I'm not. Mr. Paulson told me that he was hired to do this thing.
Well, maybe he was hired by Lindell. Maybe Lindell hired him, and then Paulson got cold feet, and Lindell did the shooting himself.
No, I'm sure that isn't true. You see, I read the newspaper article all about it.
Well, you really were thorough about this, weren't you, Mrs. Candy?
You poor man. That cold's gone to your chest now, hasn't it?
No, I'm all right. Stop worrying about me. Let's talk about this other problem of yours.
Well, maybe I'm making it more of a problem than it should be. Maybe if I just told the police everything, I could forget it once and for all.
No, I really couldn't advise that, Mrs. Candy.
Well, it said in the newspaper story that the two men were partners in that investment firm. And Mr. Lindell thought that his partner Richardson was cheating, taking money out of the firm, and that's why he's supposed to have shot him.
Wasn't there a witness to the shooting?
Why, yes, I think there was. Come to think of it, it was Mr. Shelton. That's right.
Well, doesn't that wrap it up for you?
Well, it would if it wasn't for Mr. Paulson.
Listen, Mrs. Candy, you know how much I like you. Why, in just a few days, you're more like family to me than my Aunt Martha ever was.
Well, it's nice of you to say, Stuart.
And that's why I want you to listen to me about this. That's why I want you to forget about this whole foolish thing. And
listen to you. You sound awful, Stuart. Just tell me.
No, I'm all right.
No, you're not all right. I'm going to get you some cough medicine right this minute.
Mr. Chilton, it's me, Winfield.
Well, what's happening?
I think I better stick around for a few more days, Mr. Chilton. The old lady's beginning to get fidgety, if you know what I mean.
Well, something tells me that Stuart Winfield isn't such a nice young man after all. Could it be that he wasn't telling Mrs. Canby the truth about his dear mother and his Aunt Martha? Could he have not told her the truth about his plans for the future? Of course, the real issue is, what sort of plan does he have for Ada Canby's future? I'll be back shortly with Act 3.
This is Chris Schenkel for the President's Council on Physical Fitness and Sports. You know, you get used to looking at sports one way from up here in the booth, and sometimes we're inclined to overlook the importance of sports from another point of view. And that's from the point of view of kids. You know, a child doesn't have to be a natural athlete or a super performer on the field to be physically fit. Any child, boy or girl, can be in shape. And the best way is through a regular, vigorous program of physical education in our schools. Fitness at an early age, doctors tell us, can have a lot to do with a child's future health as an adult. Fitness can help them become more mentally alert, better achievers, more outgoing, and happier. Yes, so often we overlook the need to educate a child's body as well as his or her mind. So we urge you to support the physical education programs in your schools and to make sure your kids are getting the kind of instruction they need. For more information, write to the President's Council on Physical Fitness and Sports, Washington, D.C., zip code 20201.
Who knows how to help you solve your shopping problems?
Your Better Business Bureau knows.
But they advertised this chair for $50, and now they won't sell it to me. They're even trying to get me to buy one for $100. Isn't there anyone who can tell me what to do?
I can, madam.
But who are you?
I am the man from the Better Business Bureau. And when someone advertises an item and then won't sell it to you when you come into the store, or tries to get you to purchase something at a higher price, you may be the victim of a scheme known as bait and switch. Don't fall for it. In most places, it's illegal.
Oh, sir, how can I ever thank you?
No need to thank me, madam. That's what Better Business Bureaus are for, to help consumers get a fair deal.
Mrs. Canby. She isn't sleeping well tonight. But of course, Mrs. Canby has good reasons for insomnia. Her thoughts are whirling. Her boarder Stewart was right. She doesn't want the bother of going to the police. And she firmly believes in the old adage, if you don't trouble trouble, trouble won't trouble you. But still...
Oh, my. I'm just never going to get to sleep tonight. Poor Stuart. He's still coughing. I'm sure that room is just too drafty. I never should have let any boarders in until I got the windows fixed. Oh, dear. That poor boy. I'll never forget the terrible night Mr. Paulson was coughing so badly. And the way he looked, all gray and shrunken. If only I knew he was so sick. No, if only he'd never even come to this house.
Mrs. Canby, I killed Richardson. I did it.
Will I ever forget the sound of that man's voice?
Lindell is innocent. Lindell is innocent.
That poor man. The years he spent in jail for something he didn't do.
Let sleeping dogs lie, Mrs. Canby. My Aunt Martha always said, let sleeping dogs lie.
Oh, if only I could get some sleep.
Let us turn this matter over to God, Mrs. Canby. Not to the police. Not to the police. Not to the police.
What a strange man he is. That Mr. Chilton, where he talked about God, praying at his desk. Of course, God is everywhere, but his desk.
I killed Richardson. I murdered him for money. I was paid.
Paid. Someone had to pay him. Mr. Paulson wasn't the only guilty one. Someone else was, too.
Forget. Forget. Forget.
Oh, dear Lord. Mr. Chilton. Chilton, what did that newspaper article say? The chief witness against Mr. Lindell was Arnold Chilton. But how could he be a witness to something that never happened? How could he be? I'll have to tell someone. I'll have to talk to someone. Yes, I'll tell Stewart about it. In the morning. Stewart, are you awake?
Yes, I'm up, Mrs. Canby. Come in.
Oh, no. Now, don't tell me I'm getting breakfast in bed, too.
Well, I know you had a terrible night last night, Stuart. You were coughing much worse than ever. I guess that medicine wasn't very good.
Sorry I kept you awake, Mrs. Canby.
No, that wasn't your fault. No. Something else kept me up.
What was that?
Oh, my mind, I guess. Maybe I should say my conscience.
Well, that sounds serious.
Well, it is something serious, Stuart. Well, I might have let a man get away with murder. No, it's even worse than that. He did something worse than murder.
You're talking about Paulson again.
No, I'm talking about the man who hired Mr. Paulson. He didn't just have that man Richardson shot. He let an innocent person go to jail and die there. Now, that's like committing two murders, if you ask me. I have to tell you something that occurred to me last night.
Sure, go ahead.
Well, it's about Mr. Chelton. Mr. Arnold Chelton.
Yeah? Go on. I'm listening.
Stuart, I wonder if maybe the reason Mr. Chelton was so upset with me, the reason he didn't want me to go to the police, was because he was afraid.
Explain what you mean.
Well, what I mean is maybe Mr. Chelton had good reason besides the one he told me. He was working for both Mr. Richardson and Mr. Lundell at the time of the murder.
Well, so what?
Well, he was also the chief witness at the trial, a witness for the prosecution.
But he saw the shooting, didn't he?
But that's just the point. He saw Mr. Lundell shoot Mr. Richardson.
Well, that's not what you told me last time. I mean, that he was an eyewitness.
No, that's right. He didn't actually see the shooting. He was miles away when it happened. I don't quite remember the details.
There was something about a phone call, maybe?
Yes, that's what it was. He claimed that Mr. Richardson was talking to him on the phone when Mr. Lundell showed up at his apartment. He said that Richardson cried out something about Lundell having a gun.
And then he heard the shot.
But how could that have happened if the gun was fired by Mr. Paulson?
If, Mrs. Canby, that's the big little word, isn't it? If.
But don't you see what I'm saying, Stuart? Arnold Chelton had the most to gain.
Gain? From what?
From both these men leaving the firm. That'll leave the whole thing to him. All those customers, all the investments he handled, all the commissions, or whatever they call it.
Are you accusing this guy Chelton of being the killer?
Yes. It's the only answer, Stuart.
Well, look, if that was the case, the police would have figured it out.
But they didn't. There was nothing in the stories I read that pointed any suspicion at Mr. Chelton. I don't suppose it even occurred to them. And now, the company is all his.
You don't call that evidence, do you?
Well, then why didn't he let me go to the police? Why did he try so hard to talk me out of it? That man was praying, Stuart. He was taking the name of the Lord in vain. Oh, I'm sorry, Stuart. I'm so sorry. I won't bother you anymore. I know what I have to do anyway.
Mrs. Canby.
I won't be gone long, Stuart.
No, wait.
The minute I get back, I'm going to call Dr. George and ask him to come over. You're sick.
Never mind the doctor. You're calling the police.
No, I won't call them. You're right. I don't want them tracking mud in my parlor. I'm going down to the station house and talk to them. I'll get dressed now and go straight there.
Please think about what you're doing.
I'll tell them what I know and they can do the rest. Now, you try to eat something, Stuart. Please.
Mrs. Canby! Oh. Sheldon?
What is this, Winfield? I told you not to call me at the office.
It's an emergency.
You sound terrible. What's the matter with you?
I'm sick. Only you're going to be a lot sicker.
What are you talking about?
The old lady. I can't stop her. She's decided to talk.
What?
She figured it out. Figured out exactly what you did, Chelton, and how you did it.
You fool. You've got to stop her. Do you hear me?
That wasn't part of the deal, Chelton.
It's all of the deal now.
The price didn't include anything like that.
The price just doubled. Old ladies are always having accidents. Make her have one. Make her have one now, Winfield.
All right. All right, she's gonna have a fall down the cellar steps. Right now. I gotta get my robe on and my slippers. I gotta hurry.
Stuart? Is that you?
Open up, Mrs. Canby.
For heaven's sake. Stuart Winfield, what are you doing out of bed? Now, you go right back there this second.
I gotta talk to you, Mrs. Canby, before you go to the police.
Just listen to you. You're all winded. You can hardly talk, Stuart. Now, go back to bed before you catch pneumonia, too.
Now, don't go, Mrs. Canby. It would be better if you never went to the police. Better for you. Better for me.
For you? I don't understand.
Well, then, I wouldn't have to hurt you, Mrs. Canby. That's what I mean. I wouldn't have to do anything bad to you.
Stuart, what in the world are you talking about?
Come on, old lady.
No, no.
You're smart, all right. You really think things through. So now, think a little harder.
You knew? Stuart, you knew about Mr. Paul?
That's right.
That's how you knew my room was to rent, because Mr. Shelton told you.
Now you're getting there, Mrs. Canby.
And that's why you rented it. That's why. You were sent here.
Just to watch you, Mrs. Canby. Just to see that you stayed sensible.
Mr. Shelton did.
I was hoping you'd never change your mind about calling the police. I didn't want this part of it. This isn't the part I like.
Let me go, Stuart.
Just relax, Mrs. Canby. Just take it easy.
Stuart, please.
Why, you're as light as a feather, Mrs. Canby. Just like my Aunt Martha would have been if I had an Aunt Martha.
Stuart, please put me down. Please.
We've got a date now, Mrs. Canby.
Let me go. Stuart,
let me go. We'll have such a fight, Mrs. Canby. I'm sick, remember?
Stuart, no.
Just shut your eyes. Please, shut your eyes and don't look down.
Oh, God. Stuart, those stairs.
Just shut your eyes, old lady.
Help me, somebody.
They'll all be over there. Stuart!
It's all right now, Ada. Just be glad that it wasn't you at the bottom of those stairs.
Will he be all right, Dr. George?
Now, what do you want to worry about that man for? Truth is, his injuries don't amount to very much. A couple of broken ribs seem to be the worst of it. But he'll be a patient for some time before they can put him in prison where he belongs. Him and his friend. What was that man's name again?
You mean Mr. Chelton? Have they arrested him?
Yeah. That's what the police detective said.
I don't understand. Stuart's injuries aren't serious.
It's not the fall that made Winfield so sick. His case was diagnosed as simple pneumonia at first. And then I remembered about your first boarder. Nelson, was it?
Paulson.
Yes, Paulson.
But he had pneumonia, too. He died of it. Oh, is pneumonia contagious?
Yes, it is. But this disease was even more contagious. It's a pneumonia caused by a disease called psittacosis, better known as parrot fever. You get it from sick birds, like the parakeets in your spare room.
Oh, no. Mr. Paulson's birds?
Sorry, Ada, but they had to be taken out and destroyed.
Oh, what a shame.
Hey, there's one reason I feel sorry for them. They saved your life. Made Mr. Winfield too weak even to throw a little old lady down a flight of steps.
Those poor little creatures.
Yeah, but you can be grateful they didn't make you sick, too. Parrot fever is so contagious that no more than one person in 1,000 could be exposed to it and escape infection. It was pretty darn close to a miracle, Ada.
We're hard to kill, Doctor. Remember? The old ones are hard to kill.
They say that people are living longer than ever before. And when we look at Ada Canby, we can understand why. She's a tough old lady. So tough, she could withstand the threats of man, beasts, and bird. So let that be a warning to all those who think that our senior citizens are easy prey for crime. Watch out. They may turn the tables on you. Or the stairs. I'll be back shortly.
From the moment that a child becomes aware of himself as a thinking being, he begins the difficult task of learning to communicate. For a while, gestures coupled with sounds are all he has. Then, gradually, he starts to assimilate the language he hears. And finally, the breakthrough and the miracle of human speech is his. As difficult as that process is for a child born without handicaps, imagine what it's like for one with cerebral palsy. In addition to the brain damage, which may make it difficult to walk or even use his hands, very often his speech center may have been affected as well. Although speech therapy may help, guttural sounds and slurred consonants may be the best he can muster in his effort to communicate. Imagine that same child years later. For children with cerebral palsy do grow up, and they need you then as much as ever to be understood, to find jobs, to enjoy life. Think about that when you are asked to give to United Cerebral Palsy.
We have one final comment for you on behalf of Ada Canby and old people everywhere. There's a saying, there's no fool like an old fool. But it's also true that there's no wisdom and strength like old wisdom and strength. There. Does that make you feel better about your next birthday? Our cast included Agnes Moorhead, Leon Janney, and Roger DeCoven. The entire production was under the direction of Hyman Brown. Now, a preview of our next tale.
Now, wait a minute.
Now, hold it, Luke. Mr. Dracon, if I have your name right.
The title is meaningless for me, and even the name is only an approximation in translation to your tongue. Call me then, Dracon.
Very well. Dracon, who are you?
I will try to simplify. I am not of your galaxy. I am a Centauri 7. A quintillion of light years from your solar system.
It would be easier if you had a presence, Dracon. We could talk more sensibly then.
No, I believe to the contrary. You could not conceive of me even if I could make some emanation before your eyes. No, the voice must be enough.
Well then, what is it you want?
I am going to take you to Centauri 7.
This is E.G. Marshall inviting you to return to our Mystery Theater for another adventure in the macabre. Until next time, pleasant dreams.
CBS News is next on KIXI, AM and FM in Seattle. The time is 12 midnight.
CBS News. The Washington Post says the Watergate grand jury has expressed its belief that President Nixon was involved in a conspiracy to obstruct justice in the case. This is Doug Poling reporting on the CBS radio network. The Post story refers to a sealed report the grand jury presented Friday to Judge John Sirica. The newspaper says the report contains about 50 paragraphs of evidence concerning the president. The Post says it learned the grand jury considered indicting President Nixon, but that Special Prosecutor Leon Jaworski told them the Constitution precludes indictment of an incumbent president. Samuel Dash, the chief counsel to the Senate Watergate Committee, also had some thoughts on the sealed report.
Sirica opened the sealed statement and read it, and not read it to the court, and will be issuing an order. And I think that that order may be quite significant on further ramifications of what the grand jury did in its investigation of the Watergate break-in and the cover-up.
Dash spoke to reporters in Portland, Oregon. What the grand jury did make public on Friday were seven indictments against former Nixon aides and political associates charged with conspiracy in the case. They include former top aides Haldeman and Ehrlichman and former Attorney General John Mitchell. More news in a moment.
I'm Gordon Barnes at the CBS National Weather Center in New York. In Maine or Miami, weekends can be fun if the weather cooperates. That's why we bring you the weekend weather every Saturday here on the CBS Radio Network. I give outlooks for the entire nation plus specific forecasts for areas where special events are taking place. So listen for my peripatetic prognostications on the weekend weather every Saturday here on the CBS Radio Network, where the listeners are.
Oh, Mommy, Johnny hit me!
If you're a parent, you've heard this cry. Do I say fight back? What do I tell him when I see and hear of so much violence everywhere?
Violence is in all of us. So is God. And that makes nonviolence a realizable goal. Individual men and women have achieved it. Perhaps one day nations will. The community of God. Make it your way. This message is brought to you by Religion in American Life in cooperation with this station.
In New York Friday, the trial of former Nixon cabinet officers John Mitchell and Maurice Stans was barely underway when there was a serious snag in the proceedings. Robert Shackney has a report.
It seemed at first a passing comment of no great importance. At the end of a long opening statement, Assistant Prosecutor James Rahill told the 12 jurors and six alternates to put themselves in the place of the grand jury that had brought the indictment against Mitchell and Stans. The grand jurors, he said, were citizens just like yourselves. Almost immediately, defense attorney Walter Bonner was on his feet demanding a mistrial. He called Rahill's remarks outrageous. He claimed they suggested that a grand jury indictment meant guilt was proven. Judge Lee Gagliardi didn't rule on the motion, but he said, "I am gravely concerned about the apparent excesses of the prosecution." Then he halted proceedings until Monday, ordered prosecutors to document an excuse for their remarks. Mitchell would make no comment about what for him would appear to be a favorable turn of events, nor would he talk about the new Watergate indictments handed up in Washington. There's no way to know if Judge Gagliardi will actually call a mistrial, but before it's even begun, before the evidence is in, the case against Stans and Mitchell is in deep trouble. Robert Shackney, CBS News, New York.
British Prime Minister Edward Heath Friday night paid a call on Queen Elizabeth at Buckingham Palace. That is usually the way prime ministers in Britain resign. But Heath says he's going to try to stay on, even though his Conservative Party failed to get a majority in the elections. He says he'll try to form a minority government. Extra gasoline supplies have started flowing into southern West Virginia, where some 20,000 coal miners have been on a wildcat strike protesting the lack of gasoline. The miners' union told the men that can get gasoline should go back to work. Many West Virginia miners have to drive long distances to and from work. The Democratic Party has approved new rules that could lead to a wide-open presidential convention in 1976. One of the biggest changes is a proportional representation system throughout the delegate selection process. Now this.
Young I may be, but still I'm a man. Just turned 18 and I'll do what I can to find me a place where I can be me. Get ready for life, be free as the sea. Where do I go from here? Oh, where do I go from here? I finished school, but what lies ahead? Don't want to
about the new Navy. You'll get your chance at success, learn an exciting job, and see the world. Call toll-free 800-841-8000. That's 800-841-8000. Or see your Navy recruiter. Be someone special in the new Navy.
I know where I'm going from here.
It seems as though the energy crisis affects just about everybody and every business. We never thought about it before, but now we're told it's even affecting the world's oldest profession. The Associated Press has taken a survey of bordello owners in Nevada, where prostitution is legal. They say business has been way down recently, partly because customers are afraid of running out of gas on their way to and from these places. One of the owners says the diesel fuel shortage is depriving them of some of their best customers, truck drivers. Doug Poling, CBS News.
CBS for Seattle, this is KIXI, the weather outlook. Calling for showers today, decreasing tomorrow with periods of partial clearing. Highs in the 40s, lows in the upper 30s, and currently it's 42 degrees. The time is 6 minutes past midnight.